I'm former Vice President Joe Biden. The Philip D. Blackman Show is going to kick me in the nuts tonight because I suck as a president. Enjoy the show as I try to remember who shit in my pants.
Listen up. The views and opinions of this radio show and podcast are prepared and provided by Philip D. Blackman in his personal capacity. The opinions expressed in this show are my own, and they do not reflect the view of this radio station, broadcasting platform, or any organization Philip D. Blackman is a member of. The material and information presented in this broadcast is for general information purposes only. Any and all media presented are the property of their respective owners, and its use does not imply endorsement or opposition to any specific organization, product, or service. Let's get started.
Man, happy Monday. And this is going to be a different show tonight.
It's time!
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands. One nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
How you doing, folks? Happy Monday. Man, I hope everyone is well, blessed, and just feeling all kinds of right as we start our show this Monday. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the episode of the Philip D. Blackman Show. I'm your host, Philip Blackman, and welcome to the fastest hour in radio. So sadly, last week, you know, we saw two more mass shootings. Two mass shootings that took the lives of innocent people. Senseless acts of violence. And instead of blaming the suspects for their crimes and their disregard for basic human decency, these politicians, these drive-by media machines, are once again blaming the weapon. Yeah, even former Vice President Joe Biden is back for another sound bite. He's apparently eyeing his desire now, not only to just get rid of the scary-looking assault weapons, but to ban all semi-automatic weapons. I guess we're going back to the days of six-shooters if your Uncle Joe has his way. So tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be continuing our discussion on the debate of the U.S. Constitution's Second Amendment and, of course, reactions from both sides of the aisle. Now, before we get our show started, friends, we're live right now on all of our social media platforms over here on Facebook, at YouTube, and as well as LinkedIn at the Philip D. Blackman Show. If you're in Twitter space or Twitch, hey, at the PDB Show is where you can find me. Or you can catch me on any of my affiliates that are out there, Raw Talk Online, Pulse Talk Radio, IPM Nation, and soon, as I understand, it's going to be, my goodness, About Face Radio. So, guys, if you want to leave a comment or you want to participate in any way of this show, hey, 409-245-9753 is the number. Or you can go on the social media stations and you can chat. You can drop us a link. Let us know where you are, where you're listening from, and, you know, hey, maybe how you're feeling about the topic we're covering tonight. So, again, for my listeners across the radio waves, that's going to be 409-245-9753. So to all my listeners across the nation and around the globe, thank you so much for tuning in. Episode number 307, the Second Amendment debate. Friends, let's get it going. But before we do, as always, for our first-time listeners, we've dedicated the opening segment, End of Watch. This one to this week actually created a little bit of a different feel because it seriously reminds us man, the effects of September the 11th, 2001 are still there. We still got brave men and women who were impacted in D.C. and more notably there in New York City. they're still feeling the effects, and we're still having people that are struggling. So this whole idea of never forget 9/11, you know, it's real easy to forget it if you're not from the area, you know, especially if you grew up with that all too familiar landscape that of the Twin Towers standing tall. But even now, when you start doing more research and you start paying attention to what's really going on from the events around 9/11, there's still a lot of first responders who are sick, who are having these sicknesses and illnesses because of their exposure to all the debris and everything else. And this one this week is one of those. You know, last year in 2021, ladies and gentlemen, we lost 651 officers. And as of right now, this recording, we're sitting at 205 police officers that have perished in the line of duty. Now, we get all of our information from the Officer Down Memorial page, odmp.org. Go give them a check out. Go give them a look and listen. And look at the stories. Look at the comments. It takes the numbers from 205 just random people to 205 names, 205 faces. And one of the things that we do every week, and Tammy, you know, she takes the lead on this end of watch segment. But we go in and we look at all these different police officers. We go and look at all these first responders, these law enforcement officers who perished in the line of duty. And it's real heartbreaking, but there is a quote on there that's really amazing for us. That says, when a police officer is killed, it's not just an agency that loses an officer, it's an entire nation. You know, here at the Philip D. Blackman Show, and of course, all of you followers, you listeners, guys, again, thank you always for so much for being, for helping me elevate my voice and my show. You know, we all honor all of our officers who serve. I mean, that is the right thing to do because these are people who have given their life and service to their community and their country. We highlight a different officer every week, beginning with our Monday show. This week, friends, we're going to cover down. We're going to bring in one of the first ones we've done, the first one we've done like this. But this right here is New York Police Department's Captain Janelle Sanders for this opening segment. End of watch.
The Philip D. Blackman Show proudly salutes Captain Janelle Sanders of the New York City Police Department in New York, who died on September 11, 2022, from cancer she developed following her assignment to the search and recovery efforts at the World Trade Center site after the 9/11 terrorist attacks. Captain Sanders served her department faithfully for 22 years. The Captain's Endowment Association said in a statement, "We will never forget the brave men and women who lost their lives 21 years ago on this sad day. Today we lost active Captain Janelle Sanders due to 9/11 illness. May she rest in peace." Captain Sanders is survived by her two daughters. On behalf of the Philip D. Blackman Show and a grateful nation, thank you for your service, Captain Sanders. New York City Captain Janelle Sanders, end of watch, September 11th, 2022. Rest in peace, ma'am.
Dear Mainland, aloha. Now, we know you guys love Friday. You even thank the creator for it, TGIF. But why leave out Thursday? Maybe you call Thursday Little Friday and be thankful for it, too.
Happy Little Friday.
It's Monday, brother.
Happy Teeny Tiny Friday.
One life, right? Mahalo.
Longboard Island Lager and Big Wave Golden Ale from Kona Brewing.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, guys, welcome back again. Thank you all so much for joining this Monday. Man, you know, normally we do a Mental Health Monday every Monday, but for some reason it just didn't, man, I wasn't really feeling it. I mean, I know we just came off of Thanksgiving and we should be doing a show talking about how thankful we are we got to celebrate the holidays with our families. And rightfully so, yeah, that might be the case, but I want to do something a little bit different. Because we've had two major mass shootings that have happened, and again, especially right around the holidays, you know, this year, or the past few years, we've been seeing more and more kitchen tables empty, you know, seats that are empty at kitchen tables because of either acts of war, acts of unnecessary violence, mass shootings, mass killings, whatever the reason, maybe a death in the family of a natural disease, whatever the case is. But, you know, this being my first holiday, the first major holiday, you know, Thanksgiving, knowing that Bill's not here, it's been weighing on my mind a lot. And then when I hear about these mass shootings that have happened, I kind of think about these other people. You know, I don't really think you can argue death as far as which side is worse. I mean, if you love the person that has passed, you know, you can't help but really look at you really can't help but examine and empathize with anyone, regardless who they are. They're spending their first holiday season without their loved ones, and it's tragic. But then what happens that it always happens, and this makes my fourth show that I'm aware of that I've done over some type of gun control conversation, because it happens every time. Every time a major situation happens in our country, the politicization that comes out, the conversation that happens is it's ridiculous among so many ways. And especially with our great divider in chief, right? You know, the former Vice President Biden. You know, he talks about this scourge, right, of gun violence. His go-to answer, 100% of the time, is to zero in on these so-called assault weapons. Again, I'm still waiting on someone. 409-245-9753. If you got the keys to the mint, let me know what is an assault weapon, because that is the go-to, right? We want to get after them. We're hearing conversation about it now. The politicization. Not so much talking about the shooter themselves and what they did and where the shortcomings have happened. No, we're talking about the weapons as if they just have the magical ability just to jump up and do what they do anyway. You know, America's heard it 100 times, including this week, Colorado and Virginia. Joe Biden wants to sign into law a ban on high-powered guns that have the capacity to kill many people very quickly. Mind you, he's talking. He includes the 9mm bullet, a 9mm. He includes a 9mm as a high-powered bullet that he will tell everyone that will listen that it'll blow your lung completely out of your body. Isn't it funny that most people who come out there and talk about gun control and talk about how we need more restrictions and how we need this, that, and all these guns are X, Y, and Z, these are people, ladies and gentlemen, who never, ever seem to know anything about a single gun. A 9mm will blow your lung out. Show me the bullet, please, because I need to stock up. If I had guns, I mean, again, I lost them all in a boating accident. It is what it is. But, you know, after the mass killings last Saturday, you know, at the gay nightclub in Colorado Springs, he said in a statement, he says, quote, "We will decide, when will we decide that we've had enough?" Of who, Joe? I'm just, you know, I mean, he says that we need to enact a assault weapons ban to get weapons of war off of America's streets. Okay, again, I'm waiting on that definition, what an assault weapon is, because truthfully, any weapon that is used as an assault can be considered an assault weapon. So, you know, I'm not trying to play word games here, but let's be consistent. If you're going to give something a definition, if you're going to give something a title, then give us something to push through. And when Joe Biden and other lawmakers, they talk about assault weapons, they're using a very inexact term to describe this group of high-powered guns or semi-automatic long rifles like an AR-15. You know, these guns that do have 30-round magazines. But by comparison, the argument that they'll say is, well, hey, well, the NYPD, they only carry handguns that shoots about half that much. Well, okay, maybe on their side, but I'll guarantee you there's, you won't, you'd be hard pressed to find a squad car that didn't have an AR variant in their trunk. Let's just be honest. You know, this weapons ban is far off from a closely divided Congress. There's no way that it's going to happen in this current Congress right now, because you're talking about, you're going to need 60 Republicans to sign on to that idea. No, that's not going to happen. You know, Biden and the Democrats, they've become increasingly emboldened in pushing for their stronger gun controls. You know, where I come from, a gun control is using one hand or two. But they're doing so with no clear electoral consequences. You know, and the Democratic House, their led House just this past legislation in July, they wanted to revive a 90s-era ban on assault weapons with Biden's vocal support. And the president, he pushed the ban nearly everywhere that he campaigned, trying to get people to jump on board. You know, Laura Harlow says in the chat that shooting in Chesapeake was scary because it was really close to home. The guy across the street a couple of weeks ago that was at home, no one here where I live now blamed the guns, but in Chesapeake. She says somewhere it is crazy. Tammy says more laws would only affect law-abiding citizens. Criminals will always have weapons, legal or not. How do you combat that? And I think that right there is kind of the rub, Tammy, because that, you know, it's funny. We hear these politicians, we hear these celebrities talk about how they want more gun control. We need more gun laws. We need more restrictions. Semi-automatic weapons are bad for everyone, so therefore no one needs to have them. Well, does that mean that you're going to go across and you're going to start getting rid of the high-powered 9mm guns that are military carries, i.e. the M9? Are you going to have your police officers carrying anything larger than a 9mm? Are you going to pull those away too because those are considered high-powered? What about our law enforcement? Are they going to be forced to give up their tactical advantages of using their AR-15s in their SWAT teams? Are they going to be going to MP5s, which, again, 9mm, it's a high-capacity magazine, high-capacity bullet, according to the administration, people who don't know anything about guns? You know, Biden and his Democratic constituents, they're threatening more and more with every one of these shootings that happen to take America's Second Amendment away by attempting to pass a bill that's going to ban assault rifles during this lame duck session. They're saying between now until the new Congress comes in, the 118th, he believes that they're going to be able to try to pass some type of assault rifle legislation. On Thanksgiving, as a matter of fact, Joe Biden, he reiterated his support for stricter gun laws, saying that it's ridiculous. Quote, it is ridiculous that red flag laws are not being enforced throughout the country. Here's what he said.
Number two, the idea we still allow semi-automatic weapons to be purchased is sick. Just sick. It has no social redeeming value. Zero. None. Not a single solitary rationale for it except profit for the gun manufacturer.
Can you do anything about gun laws during the lame duck, sir?
I'm going to try.
What will you try and do?
I'm going to try to get rid of assault weapons.
During the lame duck?
I mean, dude, whenever I got to make that assessment as I get in.
Well, he said he's got to make that assessment as he counts the votes. You know, we already know the truth. I mean, it's just the unbelievable reality that he's going out there saying that he is demanding that we pass and we ban all assault rifles, or all assault weapons is what he says. Not assault rifles, all assault weapons. So that means most of your hammers and your hammers, your saws, your baseball bats, you know, those things, they're going to be banned from now on, right? But even more so, the reality is when we're talking this whole idea of assault weapons ban, what's ridiculous about it all for me personally is most of your mass shootings, and they do this especially after every mass shooting that happens. Most of your mass shootings that happen in this country, they happen with handguns. But yet we they're still going after that big, bad, scary looking weapon of war. Well, even a musket, a black powder rifle, that was a weapon of war. So in essence, when they start using this type of verbiage, when they start saying assault weapon and weapons of war, This is just a red herring. This is a name they want to give to say that, hey, any and all guns are considered a weapon of war, so therefore no one can have them. And why would the government do that? You know, Tammy brings up a good question in the chat. She says, as he's being protected right now in this video by people who are carrying semi-automatic weapons, because they are bad, right? These guns that are good enough to protect them are bad enough to protect for people to protect themselves. Laura Hurlow says, right, and it would boil down to enforcing the damn laws we have, and that is also the rub on it. There's where people like me, because I am a pro-gun guy. I love firearms. I see their uses. I see their goodness, and also recognize the bad. But the thing is, there is no such thing as an assault weapon. It's people who use weapons for assault. Let's be honest about it. You know, this whole notion, this whole narrative that we have to ban assault weapons, that we have to go on this assault against guns, firearms, it's ridiculous. I mean, if you truly were legitimately concerned about the weapons that people are using to kill others, you know, maybe you should start with the drug line first. We tried that war on drugs. Remember, how'd that work out for most of America? It didn't. Because we still have the problems. If you're concerned about people's lives and you want to do it for the kids, then okay, then focus on the things like child trafficking. Why are we not shutting down on that? I mean, there's so many there's so many different things that's being used and is being politicized. It is disgusting. Chad Miller. All right, so I got to stop my show. Chad, 409-245-9753. We want to hear from you. So, Chad, these guys are getting ready for the Talisker Whiskey Challenge. They're going to be rolling across the Atlantic. If I'm not mistaken, they're already en route. And Chad, I want you to call so you can give us whatever information that we can, where we can keep up with your shows or keep up with your progress as the race is going. But man, if I don't hear from you, man, good luck. Tammy says, why are our lives not as valuable? Everyone should be allowed the means to defend themselves. Just my opinion. Absolutely. You know, so I want to hit this, because a lot of people, this is always an argument, right? The Second Amendment of the Constitution, this is what it says, quote, a well-regulated militia, comma, being necessary for the security of a free state, comma, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, end quote. Okay. Why did I read the punctuation? We typically don't, but some people argue that the Second Amendment, it's specifically for militias. You know, if you've ever taken an English literacy course, and most likely it was probably your freshman year of high school, you know, you'd understand the basic use of pronunciation in the language. I want to read it again. A well-regulated militia, comma, being necessary for the security of a free state, comma, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. What this amendment is saying is a well-regulated militia and the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. You know, what's in between the commas, the being necessary for the security of a free state, that is specifically pointing out what the expected duty of the militia is for. You know, this amendment is not just for a well-regulated militia. It's for all people who have a right to keep and bear arms. I don't understand where the disconnect is, but for some reason we still have it. You know, George Mason, he's an American delegate from Virginia, you know, as they wrote the U.S. Constitution, the Constitutional Convention. He says, quote, I ask who are the militia? They consist now of the whole people, except for a few public officers. He also said that, quote, to disarm the people is the most effectual way to enslave them. That is one of the delegates that wrote the Constitution. He said right there, to disarm the people is the most effective way to enslave them. So if you're asking why would the government be interested in taking your guns, well, I think that right there kind of lays it out. He points it out right there. Noah Webster is another one. He also said, quote, before a standing army can rule, the people must be disarmed, as they are in almost every country in Europe. The supreme power in America cannot enforce unjust laws by the sword because the whole body of the people are armed and constitute a force superior to any band of regular troops. Yeah, it's home field advantage, absolutely. But you know, the American people, I really feel they should be very alarmed by these growing restrictions that we've seen created in our government since 2022 in response to tragedies, especially when they're paired with gun control across the nation. I mean, in mere months, you know, these rules supposedly implemented for our good. Do you recall that? For the good of everybody, you got to do this. You know, they threatened freedoms for which our forefathers fought and died. You know, our nation was founded by patriots who refused to comply with the tyranny and the unceasing quest for centralized power. You know, planted deep into the philosophical nature of who we are as a nation, or as a notion that government is subordinate to the natural rights of individuals, and it's the government's sole purpose to protect these rights. Our founding fathers, they cherished the belief that our rights, they didn't come from humans, but they come from our creators or from nature itself. You know, these rights, as our founders believe, they are unalienable. That means they can't be taken away or infringed upon because they're provided to us from a source greater than any human power that exists. Humans' common nature, it includes the vital governing of tools of reason. Hence, humans have a right to exercise this reason without being infringed upon, as long as it doesn't violate another's ability to do the same. Our founders believed the government was the protector of these rights, not the source of controlling reason for us. The lives that were taken by gun violence, by COVID, by 9/11, all these things, they've cast a doubt. They've cast a very dark cloud, a dark tragedy upon our nation that really no one can even attempt to downplay. But like every decision that's made in times of tragedy, we can't let the solution lead to results worse than the problem itself, because that's what we're looking at. You know, when making tough decisions, our solutions can't be based purely on the worst possible outcomes. I mean, for example, you know, we wanted to limit the number of COVID cases at the time, but the measure to do so, it wasn't weighed against the consequences that it would have on other aspects of life, like our children's education falling absolutely to the wayside, and it's crippled an entire generation. You know, the state test scores that have come out regarding math and reading, it provides an example of the hindsight proof that harm was done, despite the fact that parents were only issuing this complaint when the lockdowns were first put into effect, but they were told to shut up. You're not allowed to question the government. We know what's good for you. Laura Harlow says in the chat, she says, well, we need to be able to pop these quotes when opponents start spouting off about militia, this and that. I agree. And that's why I do these shows, Laura, is because I want people to try to help people formulate a response. Especially when you're looking at the verbiage of the Second Amendment, you know, because look, I'm a huge believer in that quote that even the devil can quote scripture to suit his purpose. But in this case here, when we're talking about if you want to call it a scripture, if you want to talk about what that Second Amendment says, all you got to do is look at the straight up and down writing of the Constitution to lay out that point. That's why I broke it down like it did. You know, Tammy said that people don't believe in God anymore. That's part of the problem. Laura agrees, and she says, and it frightens me. But, you know, and that's kind of the rub, right? But one thing that's quickly quelled by the government was a simple question. What are the consequences of a lockdown policy and other obnoxious COVID-19 restrictions? What was the response? Yeah, we were told that the price of no lockdown, no restrictions, or outright bans on scary things, more people will die. And they're telling you the same thing with guns. Unfortunately, we're seeing a very similar narrative being spoken about gun control in this country. Either we restrict guns, or we take them from our law-abiding citizens, or more people will die. You know, it could be fear-inducing and intoxicating to those who are willing to listen and obey, and we got plenty that are willing to do so. But however, more people die when we raise speed limits. More people die when our country goes to war. More people die because we allow alcohol to be legally sold, yet we still decide to allow these things. Why? I mean, every decision that's made, it must have a cost-benefit approach, especially if you're going to run it right. I've been saying the United States government is a business. It needs a businessman. Because businessmen weigh it out by, or businesswoman, business person, let's be inclusive, everything's a cost benefit analysis. I mean, raising the speed limit allowed our citizens to travel more efficiently. Going to war protects our country from being conquered and our national ideals. They gain more global influence. Legalizing alcohol, it provides human enjoyment and a way to relax and socialize with our neighbors, maybe just make it through the day. And we can't purely make decisions about whether people are going to die or not. We can't not base our decision based on the number of deaths. It's insufficient policymaking. I mean, the real cost of a lockdown policy and heavy restrictions is the threat that it poses to our security, to our liberty. Laura Harlow says, look at what they're doing in China right now over being locked down. That's insane. I fear for some of those folks that are going to disappear for voicing their unhappiness. And you're probably right. But, you know, giving away our individual freedom, it's a whole lot easier. And we've learned it, especially since 9/11. You know, for those of you that were around at that time, giving away your freedoms, it's a whole lot easier than it is to get those freedoms back. Every time that we allow our government to continue to impose more restrictions that tell us how we are to live our lives, even in the face of a tragedy, we're walking down an irreversible path. You know, an example, you know, here in America, tens of thousands of people have been financially and psychologically suffocated by the lockdowns and COVID restrictions. Nobody cared. Adults lost their ability to pay taxes. Parents lost their ability to provide for their children. Business owners have been able to keep their doors open and maintain a steady cash flow. The effects were strenuous. They have physical, psychological, financial consequences that are all miserable. So why do we have leaders right now, even still, who are pro-lockdown and pro-restrictions, especially on American freedoms? Why are leaders pro-gun control and anti-assault rifle and yada, yada, yada? You know, one answer that must be taken very seriously is that the political elitists, they see this as a perfect opportunity to, I don't know, maybe to advance their power and give them that ability to control the population and their freedoms all in the name of security. I mean, it's an extremely important concept to understand. Political leaders, they want us to have a crippling fear of life and guns without their oversight because death. I mean, how much did we truly hear after 9/11? Do this or the terrorists will win. You know, it was a running joke back then, you know, for a lot of us, you know, after the 9/11, as the government got people to do and to give away their rights because of a new emerging boogeyman. Remember that? And there's not a better example I can give you than probably the late, great Ralphie May.
Because the Muslim is going to get you. The Muslim is going to get you. The Muslim is going to get you tonight. Allah, Allah. Allah, Allah.
You know, they want every aspect of your life to revolve around the fear. And for the severity of it to seem greater than really what it actually is, it's called gaslighting. And when people are in a state of distress, panic, or vulnerability, they will gladly give up enormous amounts of independence all for that great big security. And political leaders in the media, they know it. They know it very well. That's why they play it so hard. I mean, if you look at historical examples of the rise of centralized power, in many of the cases, leaders were able to obtain extraordinary amounts of influence by convincing their people that they needed a holy protector, and only I'm your guy. You know, they told their people that there was a threat that was so great that they needed to hand over their freedoms to the government so the government could protect them. You know, you don't have to dig too deeply to find these hints of this same strategy playing out among our current political leaders. I mean, why are we not blaming cars for drunk driving accidents? Why are we not going after contractors for carrying concealed weapons, you know, off their tool belt, i.e. a hammer? It's ridiculous. Why are we not going after makers like Little Debbie, these fat cakes, right? These fatty cakes out there that give people diabetes. Why are we not going after them? Because they're harming people. A lot of people die of diabetes every day. Why are we not targeting those weapons of war, right? Because you're declaring war on fat people. I know this all sounds ridiculous, but that's the whole reason I'm wrapping this story like this, because it is ridiculous. It's a silly notion. I understand. You know, the trend of unnecessary restrictions is continuing to grow right before our very eyes. Just pay attention. I think Americans as a whole, we need to just take a step back. We need to recognize how our government, how the moves that our government's taking, it threatens not only our health, but also our freedom. If you haven't been paying attention since 2020, then I don't know what else to tell you. But without question, there's a large number of health risks to everyone across the globe. Let's be honest. But we should not, we must not ever live in constant fear for a life in fear and in a search of safety. That's no life at all. You know, life is meant to be lived, even in times of fear. There's no such thing as a perfect safety. And to rely on some out-of-touch government official to provide that safety at the expense of your freedom, it's a detrimental mistake. As the great Benjamin Franklin once said, those who would give up essential liberty to purchase a little temporary safety, they deserve neither liberty nor safety. And that's the point of today's show, to discuss and examine the safety argument when it comes to more restrictions of gun ownership. So let's dive into this segment, The Breakdown. You know, the Second Amendment, you know, we opened the show with it, laying it out for you because I wanted you to see exactly what the Second Amendment stated. And here, I'll go ahead and put it back up there for you. You know, the Second Amendment addressing the right of American citizens to bear arms, it's a touchy subject. I get it. But its effect on our daily lives, it can't be overstated. Being able to protect ourselves in a world that's becoming more and more dangerous by the day, it's essential to survive. The right to arm yourself, whether it's a weapon is concealed or not, doesn't matter. It's become more important than ever. I want you to take a stroll through any big city. If you've never been to one, I encourage you to go to your nearest big city. But think about the last time you went to a big city. You know, you're likely to see a replay of what I've witnessed in multiple big cities across the United States when I was doing Secret Service support, when I was working for the NFL. Rampant homelessness, burgeoning crime, and proliferation of drug use. You know, feeling safe, it should be an inalienable right. But today, that's no longer given in this country. I mean, instead, our cities, they're in a dangerous downward spiral. Just pay attention. They're increasingly filthy, crime rates are skyrocketing, and make no mistake about it. America and its people, they are at risk. Cities that used to be barometers for the American experience, they're now the bastions of a hellish disarray. Just go to San Francisco, and you'll see precisely what I'm talking about. Shoeless drug addicts, they roam the streets like zombies in a trance, and they're treating the streets like public toilets. Droves of homeless people, they shoot up heroin, not in the trash-littered back alleys, but in plain sight on major roads. They don't care if you're walking by. The gutters are literally filled with discarded syringes. What we need to rectify this situation is more policing, more enforcement of the rule of law. But until then, we're going the wrong direction by focusing on something so simple, gun control. You know, we need to be increasing funding to the police, not defunding them. We need to ensure that law-abiding citizens, they can afford their constitutionally guaranteed right to bear arms. You know, it's an essential way for men and women to protect themselves. People kill people. Guns do not. You know, it's obvious that overregulating gun ownership, it's going to have zero effect on the estimated, we'll say, 400 million guns that are already in private circulation. I mean, gun control just simply can't stop the violence in this country, no matter what they'll tell you. You know, and that's being caused by these crime-ridden society that's out of control, these gun crimes that are being committed in gun-free zones. I mean, imagine you're a small business in a big city that's rife with crime and short on cops. Imagine how you might react if an armed robber was to bust into your store and pulled a gun and demanded cash. I mean, you could meekly hand over the money and put your fate in the hands of an armed criminal, hoping that they just don't decide to orphan your children anyway. Or you could maybe, I don't know, put some odds in your favor by giving yourself the likelihood of defending yourself with a perfectly legally purchased, properly regulated firearm. You know, Tammy brings, she asks a question here. She says, Why are they not calling for a ban on knives after four college students were stabbed to death? Four people dead with a knife present is still a mass killing. It is silly, Tammy, and crazy enough, they still do not have the killer. But the media is not really covering down on that Virginia stabbing either. Laura Harlow says, and the lamestream media ignores it all. Hey, great minds think alike are simple and share the same thought. But, you know, in San Francisco, the former DA, Chelsea Boudin, she decided, and here's an idea of where we're going as a country. She decided that the city wouldn't be prosecuting thieves who stole as long as their thievery fell beneath a certain price point. Now, the initiative, it was announced publicly. And the result of the ridiculousness? Well, you saw it. Gangs of criminals breaking into stores. And if you want to talk about throwing gas on a fire, that is how you do it. Hold my beer. You know, we saw the videos of these shocking crime sprees posted online where people just walk in and take whatever they want and walk out. They don't hide their face. They don't hide anything. They just do it. And they know no one's going to do anything about it. You know, in this era of lawlessness, you know, the best life insurance policy that I can think of for anyone is tucked into a holster. I mean, should we be forced to choose a thug's life or over our own? I mean, should we have the means to make the right decision? Should we have the right to defend ourselves? Absolutely. You know, these gun control activists, they like to point to the mayhem that's wrecked by mass shootings, especially in schools, which are truly a terrifying reality. We recognize that. Uvalde's just right up the road from where I am. But we know that the perpetrators of those horrors, they're often mentally ill people. I mean, I don't understand how you could get to any other conclusion, especially when you consider killing unarmed children, unarmed adults, people just trying to live their life, you know. I'm not opposed to sensible steps to keep a dangerous gun out of the hands of the sane or out of the hands of the insane and the criminal, not at all. But what I am opposed to is the overreach by the government to prevent law-abiding and rational Americans from securing firearms of their choice. You know, the gun violence deaths that was detailed in Giffords Law Center, they hype the numbers to fail to look at the hard truth. Yeah, it looks like someone tried to call him. Don't know who that was, but give me a call back if it only rang in my ear once. So give me a call back, that 346 area code, and we'll bring you in. But, you know, the gun deaths that are caused by people who misuse guns and stricter gun legislation who would do very little to stop those individuals who are compelled to use a gun to commit a crime. If their mind is made up, you can't stop them. There's no laws that's going to stop it. I'm sorry. It's just not possible. You know, the sooner we recognize this is the truth and the sooner we recognize where our country's headed, the quicker it's going to come to the realization that we must truly protect ourselves at all costs. You know, argue that responsible gun owners, they know how to properly secure their weapons away from children. They often train with professionals and they carry with care. You know, gun ownership by good people, it deters crime. We've seen countless cases on it, but you won't see it in the media because they don't want to cover it because it shoots their narrative right in the foot. No pun intended. But I tend to argue that maybe a criminal may think twice about committing their attack if they're forced to wonder, is this victim packing? I mean, as the saying goes, if guns are outlaws, then only outlaws will have them. But what's more, you know, stricter laws, they make it more difficult for people to protect their homes, for people to protect their families. And it's a growing concern in a day and age where fewer and fewer people, they want to become police officers. Because of the assault on police, people are feeling like they have to defend themselves because they can't rely on the men and women in uniform. But in addition, I want you to consider the reality. Police simply just cannot protect everyone all the time. And yeah, response times may be short, but the window for self-preservation, it typically occurs in just mere moments. I read a Pew Foundation report that found that 79% of male gun owners and 80% of female gun owners, they said that owning a gun made them feel safer because it gives them the ability to feel like they don't have to be a victim if they don't want to be. Another 64% of people, you know, living in a home with someone who owns a gun, they also said they felt safer because they understood the owner of that firearm knew what they were doing. They understood that owner of that firearm was responsible. You know, safety in a land without allowing people to exercise their Second Amendment right, it's going to become even harder to find. As long as these politicians are having their way and they're politicizing everything, but good people can make America safer, maybe with a permit in their pocket and a holster gun on their hip. Maybe that's where we need to be. Give people and encourage people to defend themselves. But, you know, getting to what started all this off, you know, in the span of 3 days, America saw two high-profile mass shootings. The first one occurred in Colorado Springs, Colorado, which is not a surprise when you consider just about anything that when I read a headline, I almost automatically know that it comes from the state of Colorado just by looking at the way the headline is written, because Colorado has a lot of problems. But in Colorado Springs, Saturday, a shooter opened fire at a gay nightclub and he killed 5 people. The second shooting happened in Chesapeake, Virginia, when another individual killed 6 people and himself at a local Walmart. Now, Democrats and their close friends and their allies in the activist media, in both instances, they rushed to make political hay of the tragedies. They used the deaths to promote more restrictive gun laws on law-abiding Americans. They argued to decrease the frequency of these mass shootings, and again, statistics will prove that is not ever the case. But after more information has come out about both shootings, it's very clear that they're both going to fade into distant memory by the end of the month, which, for the most part, it's already happened. How much coverage are you seeing right now in Virginia and Colorado? It's really backed off a lot. And I think the reason why is because neither of these incidents is as useful to the left as they previously thought. I mean, indeed, after the facts emerged, it was really apparent that they're going to have a hard time exploiting them politically. So for starters, let's talk about the first one, Walmart. You know, it doesn't do much to contribute to the left's narrative about mass shootings because this man, Andre Bean, he is the lead shooter who also committed suicide after the shooting. Now, he appears, you know, by graphic, maybe he lives down south where he gets a great tan, or he could be maybe black or Hispanic. I'm not going to speculate because I don't know, but you know, like with the confusion of George Floyd being a white guy beating up a black teenager, he was a Hispanic male. But this right here, there's no doubt in anyone's mind that Andre Bean is not a white guy. So that right there instantly killed their narrative that this was, any way they can make it a hate crime. I mean, it was very evident the moment that he was identified. Major outlets like CNN, they didn't display his picture in their immediate coverage. So for this shooting right here in Walmart to be useful to the left, the alleged perpetrator would have had to been a straight white male, preferably wearing a MAGA hat. You know, secondly, though, he didn't use an AR-15 or any other weapon of war to carry out the attack. Instead, he used a pistol, which falls into the line of most mass shootings in this country. It's the most common type of firearm used in mass shootings. Now, this means that the evil act would not really bolster Biden's calls for ban on assault weapons, despite the fact that the handguns can be just as dangerous as a rifle in those types of shootings. You know, Democrats know that really trying to ban handguns is about as good an idea as eating yellow snow, but I think AOC might give it a try at least once, which is why they're starting to with the scary-looking long guns first, right? I mean, but lastly, the third point, though, is he wasn't likely motivated by far right-wing ideology. He was a manager of the store. He had problems with some of his coworkers, and that's according to witnesses. Now, the motive is not yet clear, but it's unlikely that there is anything that could be politically exploited. I mean, we do know from excerpts from his manifesto that this was more of a case of workplace violence rather than a random attack, which really, again, doesn't help the narrative that this is typically built right after mass shootings. In his manifesto, he talked about how people gave him a hard time, how they made fun of him. He was pissed off at the people there. This wasn't a random shooting. This was very deliberate. So because it was a very deliberate attack with a handgun by a non-white male, the narrative goes out the window and there's not very much conversation about it after the fact. Now, in the case of the individual who attacked the patrons at Club Q in Colorado Springs, you know, the narratives that progressives were building, it's already fallen apart within 3 days after the incident. You know, the shooting was admittedly more likely to be useful for Democrats, you know, for political purposes. I mean, it appeared to have all the hallmarks of the type of incident progressives would leverage against their opposition. Firstly, the shooting happened at a gay club. Now, that's a fact that Democrats attempted to use to lay blame on the deaths at the feet of conservatives speaking out against the sexualization of children. Now, indeed, it only took about 7 seconds after the story broke for them to go on television and social media to claim that Republicans are responsible for inspiring the assault, despite not knowing any other facts about the case. Moreover, Anderson Aldridge, the guy on my screen, he's the alleged assailant. He used an AR-15 to carry out his crimes. Oh, now we got something to hang our narrative on. You know, this factoid made progressives even more eager to politicize this shooting, arguing that more gun control legislation is needed to curtail these incidents. But nevertheless, it was later revealed that Anderson Aldridge, ready? The suspect is a member of the LGBTQ community. So, where is it a hate crime at this point? You know, the defendant's attorneys, they've noted in court filing that the individual identifies as non-binary. They go by they, them pronouns. Now, when this information came to light on Tuesday night, man, it was a clear nail in the coffin of the narrative progressives were hoping to promote. Yo, CNN, unsurprisingly, they've been the worst of the bunch. As we've noted, you know, on a Thursday interview, after they interviewed a transgender woman, they say, who suggested that Anderson Aldridge, the suspect in that mass shooting at the Club Q, that killed 5 people, he could not have possibly been non-binary because, quote, he's a man. All right, now, wait a minute. So you're telling me that we, as a society, we must honor the gender pronouns of anyone, but in this case here, it's impossible for Anderson Aldridge to be non-binary because he's a guy. Is anybody else tracking the lunacy of these comments, of these arguments? How in the world does that math add up? I would love to understand. I'd love to know, but I can't seem to find it anywhere. But crazy enough, it followed into a segment which there's an anchor. You'll see her in just a minute. Allison Camrota, she looked visibly agitated as she was reading this report, and she was momentarily speechless after finding out what the lawyer said, as though she did not want to believe it. But this didn't stop her panel from attempting to keep the narrative going, even if they had to violate some of the tenets of wokeism. Indeed, they're more willing to continue misgendering the shooter, because now we got to make that an issue, while claiming the person is only claiming to be non-binary to avoid a hate crime charge. Watch this exchange.
So, attorneys for the accused shooter, Anderson Lee Aldridge, say in new court filings tonight that the suspect now identifies as non-binary. In a footnote to a motion asserting legal privileges, the public defenders say, quote, Anderson Aldridge is non-binary. They use they, them pronouns, and for the purposes of all formal filings, will be addressed as Mix Aldridge. So, in other words, not Mr. or Ms. Joining me now, CNN political commentator Errol Lewis, also back with me, Al Franken and Joe Walsh. I don't know what to say about that. I mean, that's not anything that we had heard.
Listen to this explanation.
You know, people have been looking into his background, and I don't know if anybody here, are you guys lawyers? I don't know what to say about that. I mean, that's what he's now saying.
It sounds like they're trying to prepare a defense against a hate crimes charge. That's the least of his problems, legally speaking, but it looks like they're trying to build some kind of sympathy or at least confusion on the question of whether or not this was purely motivated by hate.
That is what it sounds like. We'll wait to see.
So that was CNN commentator Errol Lewis to say that, again, how many times, you know, because remember, this whole time we've been hearing, we've been getting browbeaten by the political left, by the media elite, that we have to respect these binary labels, right? So not only now does that narrative, and I saw the comment here, Laura Harlow, there it is. Oh, let's twist that narrative. That's exactly what they did because Errol Lewis kept saying, that's the least of his concern. Well, wait a minute. I thought you were woke. I thought we had to identify and we had to respect what they wanted to be called. But, you know, for me, the real story is found in the conversations that have been happening since these shootings. And quite frankly, the narrative that happens after every actual mass shooting that takes place. And I use the term actual because if you've been paying attention to the news and social media feeds from the left, they're going to tell you that 2022 is the second deadliest year for mass shootings because they've been, at last count, 611 mass shootings in the U.S. for the year 2022. Now, here's the headline from Forbes. 611 mass shootings recorded so far in 2022. Second worst year in gun violence in almost a decade. Now, look, I've never been a fan of minimizing death, and I'm not going to start today. However, that 619 figure, it's a huge, huge misrepresentation of the known facts. Let's be honest, because that is a debunked theory that is given to you by a group called the Gun Violence Archive, and I'll get into them here in a minute. But when most Americans, you know, when most Americans think about the term mass shooting, right, they picture some crazed gunman stalking the halls of a school, a shopping mall, or a nightclub, coldly and randomly executing innocent young victims. Now, what doesn't come to mind are the rival drug crews that are shooting out in Chicago or Detroit or New York or L.A., or some madman who murders his entire family. But yet, for one small influential nonprofit, Gun Violence Archive, that is where that 619 come from, or 611 come from. They argue that anytime four or more people are killed or even slightly wounded with a firearm, they call it a mass shooting. Politicians, gun control activists, and the mainstream media, they treat their reports as if they're gospel. But crazy enough, the Gun Violence Archive, they won't even stand by their research. Now, for those of you who don't know, the Gun Violence Archive, or GVA is what they're called. They were founded in 2013 by Michael Klein. He's a left-leaning philanthropist and an open government advocate. And Mark Bryant, he's the one who I'm going to be focusing on here. He's a retired computer analyst and GVA's current executive director. Now, according to Bryant, his all-inclusive definition, there were 417 mass shootings in 2019. According to the GVA, there were 417 mass shootings in 2019. Now, the official source that we do follow, the FBI, their number was at 30. So how do you go from 417 to 30? You know, I think the reason why is because the FBI is using a much narrower definition. If his higher numbers are misleading the public or being misinterpreted by journalists, it's not his fault. He wants you to know that. He believes that his numbers are fair. He says, quote, I do. But I think it's also up to the journalist and to the reader to have a better understanding of what the data says. When a journalist uses the mass shooting numbers as their lead, they're not looking at the whole situation. So he knows that the information that people are quoting, he knows it is a farce. He knows it's BS, but that's not his fault. He's just giving you the numbers, and it's your job as a journalist to make sure, it's your job as a reader to make sure that the data is legitimate. So what happened to honest journalism? Now, you know, now they do lay out, the GVA lays out the caveat that, hey, this is what we're qualifying, but not what the FBI is qualifying. So if the numbers are wrong and you're quoting the numbers is wrong, that's your fault. And look, I almost agree with that statement, because when I saw that 611 mass shootings number, I'll be honest with you, I was alarmed. I was like, wow, really? 611 mass shootings? So I dove in and I started doing my research, and then I found out, hey, that number's not 630. It's not even anywhere near, it's not even 100. It's not even over 50. You know, the mainstream media, the elected officials, and what he calls his gun violence prevention community, or the GVP, they're using his statistics, you know, that's not a question. You know, the Biden-Harris administration, they've cited Bryant's data as having a bevy of other elected officials and political candidates at the local, state, and federal level. The New York Times, the NPR, USA Today, the host of other media outlets, they now use the GVA's broad definition reporting mass shootings, although it is wrong. In an interview with Trace last month, Brian said CNN literally, quote, cut and pasted our definition of mass shooting into their definition of mass shooting. Well, again, we got to go back. Hey, if we're going to use the DOJ as a measuring stick for crime, then let's make sure that we're using it properly. But in his interview Tuesday, Brian, again, he deflected the blame for the media's overlapping or overhyping misuse of his data. He says, quote, if the numbers are misleading, the journalists didn't do their homework. You could make the argument, he says. And I think, again, but again, that's dishonest news reporting. And the fact that he knows it's dishonest and he's contributing to it should already tell you what you need to know. But these, a lot of people who are calling for gun control, they're going to cite that number at you. 611 so far in 2022, second worst ever. In 2020, we had 610 for the whole year. We got one more month left. Oh my God, the sky is falling. This whole Chicken Little thing. Hit them with that logic. Hey, look, the FBI says there's about 16, maybe. Maybe. I don't even think the number's that high. I got to look again. But why is that important? Because, again, we base all of our crime data off the FBI statistics, period. It covers all races, all religions, all sexual orientations, all genders. It covers all aspects of it. So in this case here, instead of taking the FBI that gives them what they've always been getting, the standard bearer of definitions, they're using a third party because it helps them match their narrative. Now, according to the FBI's newest report, and you can't find mass shooting reports anywhere in the FBI because they call them the active shooter incidents in the United States. So in their latest news report, the active shooter incidents in the United States, the FBI defines active shootings as, and here's their criteria. They are shootings in public places, shootings occurring at more than one location, shootings where the shooter's actions were not the result of another criminal act, shootings resulting in mass killings, shootings indicating apparent spontaneity by the shooter, shootings where the shooter appeared to methodically search for potential victims, and last criteria, shootings that appeared to be focused on injury to people, not buildings or objects. Now, some of the shootings that were excluded from the list were self-defense. That doesn't go into a mass shooting. It's self-defense. Gang violence isn't included. Drug violence isn't included. Contained residential or domestic disputes isn't included. So a person who kills their family, although by definition it is by the GVA's definition, domestic abuse where a person kills their entire family, that is not considered mass shootings. Controlled barricade hostage situations, crossfire as a byproduct of another ongoing criminal act, an action that appeared not to have put other people in peril. Those are things that are not in the criteria. But by comparison, the Gun Violence Archive, the GVA, they don't exclude anything, even if the shooting is gang or drug related. You know, which, by the way, are the two main causes of most violence in our country today. So, of course, the numbers are inflated, 611. Brian asked if he believed that if the average news consumer considered domestic violence or gang warfare when they hear the term mass shooting, and he said he didn't know. He said, I know what we do is to provide numbers and just let the journalists, advocates, and Congress critters look at the data, glean the details, and drill it down. But he knows they're not going to do that. So, look, in my humble opinion, Brian's clearly trying to have things both ways. On one hand, he claims that he wants his data to be clear, accurate, and not misinterpreted. But on the other, the data itself is neither clear nor accurate. And it's so sensational. 417 mass shootings versus the FBI's 30 for 2019. That, of course, the media and the gun control organizations, they're going to use it and misinterpret it. It fits their guns are evil narrative better than the FBI statistics, so why not use it? And once the mainstream media accepts Bryant's definition, and it's much higher numbers, they're hooked. There's no going back to the FBI's data ever again. After all, I mean, how would they explain to their viewers that the numbers for mass shootings have declined by tenfold? Ratings are at stake. And we already know the established journalist hook that if it bleeds, it leads. So I'm telling you, ladies and gentlemen, don't believe the hype and don't accept any narrative without doing your own research. Even what I'm telling you here, do your own research from the very beginning. Take what I said, take the website, and find your own narrative. Find the facts. Don't trust me to give you what the truth is. I'm giving you the truth. But I don't want you to take my word for it. I want you to invest in your own knowledge. Get out there and find the information for yourself. I mean, again, as I said on the show, it's a lot easier to fool people than it is to convince them they've been fooled. All I can do is present you with a known data and let you come up with your own conclusion. This is not an attempt to minimize anybody's death because I believe that these kinds of killings, they're horrible. And there are more victims affected by than just the ones who died. A violent death leaves behind a grieving family member, friends, communities on both sides. They're not something to politicize. They're people. And that's the breakdown. Guys, I want to take a commercial break, and we're going to come back at you with one final thing. Guys, stick around. We'll be right back with you in, we'll call it 2.5 minutes.
So I learned about roaches. I learned about kids jumping on my lap. And I've loved kids jumping on my lap.
Presenting the Best of Biden Collection, now on home video. Now you can enjoy all your favorite wacky moments from America's senile old granddad.
Well, you know, gay bathhouses and everything. It's all about round-the-clock sex. It's all, come on, man.
Including sniffing a baby. Awkward hugs. Numbers are hard.
Go to Joe 30330.
Corn Pop.
And Corn Pop was a bad dude.
Racism.
If you have a problem figuring out whether you're for me or Trump, and you ain't black. Uh-oh.
Stupid troops.
Clap for that, you stupid bastards. You stupid bastards. You stupid bastards.
Blank Stare. Blank Stare Part 2. Chris is Chuck.
All right, Chuck. Thank you very much.
All right. It's Chris, but anyway.
Chris. I just did Chris.
And many more.
Make sure the television, make sure you have the record player on at night. The phone, make sure the kids hear word.
But wait, call within the next 10 minutes and receive a free copy of Kamala's Kooky Cackles. That's right. 6 full hours of ear-piercing cackles that the whole family can enjoy. Here's how to order.
Today, I am proud to endorse Joe Biden because he will be an extraordinary president.
We cannot win this re-election. Excuse me, we can only re-elect Donald Trump.
With a clear path to lead us out of this crisis.
We have to take care of the cure. That will make the problem worse no matter what.
Joe Biden brings values and integrity to work every day because he never forgets his roots.
Kids used to come up and reach in the pool and rub my leg down.
We need a forward-looking, battle-tested leader who will fight for the people.
Poor kids are just as bright and just as talented as white kids.
The strategic thinking to bring our nation together.
I don't count drunk driving as a felony.
A leader who is the personification of hope and courage.
All men and women created by the goal, you know the thing.
Values, authenticity, and integrity.
His hands were down my skirt and up my skirt.
All right, guys, so one final thing as we wrap up this show. I just want to kind of drop some, drop some perspective, right? So, you know, on multiple occasions, you know, we've heard a lot, especially when discussing gun control. Joe Biden, he loves using the line. He says, quote, remember, the Constitution was never absolute. As his reminder, I suppose, that your God-given rights that are protected by the U.S. Constitution, they can be taken away whenever the government believes they can. Or maybe the opposite is happening. Maybe Biden's merely advancing the popular notion of a living and breathing constitution. According to proponents of this theory, what the founders couldn't have imagined, all of the changes that would happen over time, such as the development of high-powered semi-automatic weapons. Well, the founders would have never expected these high-capacity weapons, so it doesn't fall under the Second Amendment. And I guess they didn't expect social media and cell phones, smartphones, so does that put a damper on the First Amendment? I mean, it's a slippery slope. You know, the founders were very smart people. And I'm sure that they imagined that somewhere technology and society would revolve over time. They knew that. You know, Benjamin Franklin was an inventor. But what the founders certainly imagined is a scenario where the government can reach the limits on its own power and authority, on its own over a whim. You know, because that's a big reason why they fought a long and bloody war to free themselves from Great Britain. I mean, that said, Biden, he wasn't entirely wrong. The Constitution wasn't intended to be absolute. The founders did, in fact, recognize that changes would be necessary as times changed, and that's why they included that amendment process. We can change the Constitution, but it requires an act of the people of the states. The president can't do it. Congress can't do it. Now, Congress can propose amendments, and or state conventions can propose them, but the amendments, they must be ratified by people of three-quarters of the states. As Robert Livingston put it in the New York Ratifying Convention, he said that, quote, all power is derived from the people, end quote. That wasn't what Biden had in mind. He wants to change the Constitution by government edict. You know, no relevant figure in the founding generation would have accepted this as a constitutional theory. In fact, the American colonists who fought the Revolution to extricate themselves from a political system based on a living, breathing Constitution. You know, in the British system, the government was sovereign, not to the people. The government itself defined its own powers and could expand them on its own accord. And this is precisely the kind of government that Joe Biden and other proponents of the living, breathing Constitution yearn for. But James Madison, he argued that there can be no security for a consistent and stable government if the people in power can willy-nilly change the Constitution to suit their own political agenda. The Constitution was grounded in contract law. You can't have a living, breathing contract. Contractual provisions, they have fixed meaning. When you sign on the dotted line, you expect those provisions to remain constant over time. When disagreements come up, both parties continue to argue their position based on how they understood the contract when they signed it. Nobody in the world, nobody in the civilized world would ever accept a banker saying, well, I know the mortgage meant so-and-so, but now it means something different. It's a living, breathing mortgage. That's absurd. And a living, breathing constitution is no less absurd. The entire point of a written constitution was to limit the government's power. You can't limit government power when government officials can unilaterally decide the extent of their own powers and then expand those powers whenever they see fit. This is why Thomas Jefferson proclaimed that on every question of construction, let us carry ourselves back to a time when the Constitution was adopted. Recollect the spirit manifested in the debates, and instead of trying what meaning may be squeezed out of the text or intended against it, he says, conform to the probable one in which it was passed. James Wilson, another signer of the Constitution, one of the chief proponents during its ratification debate, he summed it up best. He said that in our governments, the supreme, absolute, uncontrollable power remains with the people. As our constitutions are superior to our legislators, so the people are superior to our constitutions. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. The Constitution doesn't give you power. You give the power to the Constitution. Ultimately, the government does not make the rules for the people. Let's be honest about that. It's time to start making that known. The people make the rules for the government. It's time we do. You know, Joe Biden, he would argue that the amendment process, it's entirely too difficult. But that's the feature of the constitutional system. It's not a flaw. It was supposed to be difficult for the federal government to expand its power and its authority. There has to be a broad consensus among the people of the states. The rule of law requires consistency. Otherwise, the government becomes arbitrary. When the limits on government power become subject to reinterpretation by the government itself, it then becomes limitless in power and authority. Politicians like Joe Biden would love for that to be the case, but it never works out well for the average person like you and I. Educate yourself, pay attention, and remember, the government needs you more than you need them. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that is going to do it for me. Thank you all so much for tuning in this different kind of Monday. Not so much mental health, but I just had to get it off my chest. Thank you so much, guys, for tuning into our show, because we seek not only to provide that middle ground analysis, but we remain consistent to the inconvenient truth that so many people refuse to see. The government needs you more than you need them. The government works for you. Let's hold them accountable. Quit putting these people in. Quit holding on. Quit grabbing like a deer tick to one policy that you really like and dismiss every policy that you don't. Be open-minded. You can be an independent voter and agree with a Republican and a Democrat at the same time. I promise you, your face isn't going to fall off. So until next time, friends, thank you so much for your service and your patriotism to this country. Without our men and women in uniform, our veteran community, great Americans like yourself, our country would be a very different place. We're the only ones who stand between freedom and chaos. So as always, friends, don't let your dog tags dangle in the dirt. Stay on your feet. Continue to fight that good fight against everything that's wrong. To all of you that have been tuned in and have stayed tuned in, guys, thank you all so much for joining me this Monday. Tammy, Laura, my goodness, Chad, you didn't call in. But hey, we got a lot of you guys in. Guys, thank you all so much for your comments. Thank you for being here. Thank you for supporting the Philip D. Blackman Show. Hey, look, if you love your peace, thank a police officer. If you love your freedom, you thank a veteran, and if you see a first responder, as always, give them a high five and a handshake and tell them job well done. Guys, we're stepping into the next segment of the holiday season, which is coming, Christmas right down the line. Remember what it's for. Remember what we're doing it for. And man, if you ever need an ear to talk to, 419-245-9753, you're not going through your struggles by yourself. We're always here for you. So guys, catch me every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 5 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time right here. Until next time, friends, my name is Philip Blackman. I'm out of here.